Welcome to the Professional Magician Podcast. Discover ways to book more shows at higher fees from a guy who's been doing it for over 20 years. Here's Chris Johnson.
A discussion of close-up magic and my close-up sets is all coming up in today's episode of the Professional Magician Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Johnson. Today, I'm going to break with formula a little bit. There's not going to be a separate trick talk review. I'm going to be doing mini reviews of several tricks throughout this episode. I don't do a lot of close-up magic anymore, although I've got something coming my way that will involve quite a bit of close-up magic, so it's been on my brain a lot lately. And I also have several clients I'm working for, several magicians, where I'm either helping them with their marketing or building websites or what have you, and many of them are doing close-up magic, so it's kind of been on my brain for a while. I mean, as a whole, I love close-up magic. I mean, some of the best magic is like, yeah, I mean, what do we tell our clients? It's magic that happens inches from your eyes, and it's very cool. It's very awesome. I was never much of a fan of illusions growing up because it was so far away, and I figured they could do almost anything. But close-up, it's right in their faces. I actually had a less than auspicious start to my close-up magic performing career. I remember this day very vividly. I had gotten booked by a friend of mine. His mother was a manager at Arby's, and she was tasked with having some kind of a family fun night. And obviously, she didn't have much of a budget because it's Arby's after all. So she paid my friend and I like $20 each. I don't remember what we were paid. Something like $20 each to do some close up magic for the guests at Arby's. And we get to the gig. And up to that point, anytime I did any kind of a show, I had this old battered briefcase, which I thought added character, because I'd seen Harry Anderson with this carpet bag. So I thought, well, I'm going to have a battered briefcase, too. And I got this old battered briefcase, and using paint, I painted, Phantasm's Magic all over the front. That was the name of my magic company back then, which is a horrible name for a magic company because it's not kid-friendly. And anyway, it's terrible. So I get to the gig, and my friend Ted and I are getting ready to start performing, and I've got my suitcase with me, and I'm like, "Where's your stuff?" And he's like, "Oh, it's on me." And he had his sport jacket on, jeans, and that was it. I'm like, "Really?" And so he started pointing to his pockets. Here's where my thumb tip is. Here's where this deck of card is. Here's where that deck of card is. Here's where this bill tube is. Here's, he had everything spread out on his body. He could just walk up to a table and start doing magic. And how old was I back then? Late teens, I think. And back then, that was like a revelation to me. I'm like, oh my God, that's great. Meanwhile, at this gig and other gigs, anytime I went to do close-up magic, I'd bring my suitcase with me, set it at the floor, dig out some magic tricks, and literally a couple of times pushing people's plates aside so I could do my magic on the table. I mean, it was awful. Meanwhile, here's my friend Ted doing everything the way it should be done. So over time, I eventually got to the point where I could perform close-up magic competently. As I went full-time, I began getting booked for more and more. My first few company close-up magic gigs were for companies, and they'd be outside under pavilions and people at picnic tables and things like that, and it's really hot and sweaty. So I'd bring a few tricks with me in my pockets. I'd be sweating my butt off because I'd have a jacket on or a vest, so I'd have different pockets and everything, and it was just terrible. After that, I started doing more close-up gigs indoors, and these were for corporate like hospitality suites, cocktail hours, things like that. People were mixing and mingling, and that's where I did most of my close-up magic. I mean, I remember reading and watching Eugene Berger's wonderful videos, and he was a restaurant guy through and through, and the way he had it set up was he had to be invited to the table by the guests if they wanted to see him. They'd pull up a special chair, and he'd sit down, and he'd do this close-up set. And it's really nice because he's able to use some lapping techniques and things like that, but most of us aren't so fortunate. Most of us have to walk with a group of people and make our pitch to do some magic for them. So I tried a lot of things over the years as far as icebreakers and things like that. And ultimately, what I finally decided, which was most comfortable for me, was, "Hi, I'm Chris Johnson. I was brought in by the owner of the company. I'd give the guy's name to do some magic for your event. Would you like to see something?" So in why that worked for me was I said, first of all, he was this weird guy walking up to the table. And second of all, by mentioning I was brought in by the owner of the company, their boss, that got me a lot of yeses because they didn't want to say no to something the boss wanted. And so that was kind of like my pitch. I mean, I've heard of other pitches where people will walk, you know, somebody, a magician will walk up to a table, hold up a white knife and say, did you, one of you guys drop this? No. Well, how about this one? He turned it to black and then he'd be off and running. He kind of slide into performing. I never felt comfortable with that. So I eventually just went ahead and started doing things my way, like I just outlined. Now, before I continue with my particular sets that I use now, I want to get into a couple of things that were part of my Sterling Magic sets and that I eventually cut them. The first was a color-changing knife routine. I got a really nice set from, I can't remember if Pop Hayden manufactured these knives or if he just recommended them and bought them. I can't remember. But these knives are really nice because the white one had a smooth finish and the black one had... I can't think of the word. It's kind of like a bumpy finish. So you could tell immediately in your pocket which knife was which, you know, the color-changing knife, which end was up. And it saved a lot of fumbling when you were getting into your routine. So that was really, really nice. And I loved Pop Hayden's routine because it was more than just, hey, look, I can make a knife change. There's a whole storyline around it. The intricate web of distraction. I mean, it was a really well-constructed routine. And that's how I always performed it. Ultimately, I quit doing the color-changing knife routine simply because it just didn't get the reactions. I mean, I've talked about this in my newsletter and various things over the years, and there's just certain magic for me that just doesn't get the reaction. I can't do a professor's nightmare and expect to get any kind of a reaction from it, and that just amazes a lot of my fellow kid show performers because they use professor's nightmare all the time. But for me, I listen to my audiences, and they like the color changing knife routine. They didn't love the color changing knife routine, so I eventually dropped it. Another trick that I use, and I still use this trick to this day, I just don't use it for strolling, was Eugene Berger's handling of the sponge balls. It's a beautiful routine. If you haven't learned it yet, dig out one of Eugene's videos. He teaches it in several videos. I learned it off of his Magical Voyages video, Volume 1. And like Eugene Berger, everything is gold. And what was nice about this is you didn't have to have a lap for this. You could do it standing up. And I love Eugene Berger, but a lot of his stuff was designed for a seated performance. So his routine was better than a lot of other routines because I've seen other routines out there where it's just, you know, this ball changes, he jumps from this hand to this hand or two jumps to this hand or whatever, but there's not a big finish. And this, there is a big finish. So it starts off with you show one little red ball. And you know, they're invited to look at it. They can pick it up if they want to. And then using a sawing motion, you cut it in half, so there's two balls. It's just a really neat little move that I don't remember if it was Eugene Berger's invention, but I'd never seen anybody else do it before or since. And it's a great move. From there, you have the spectator hold the sponge balls, and then they'll hold one, and then there's two, and then there's three, and then there's three, take away one, and there's still three, and then it ends with the spectator opening their hand, and like 18 of them jump, 12 or 18 sponge balls jump out of their hand. It's really, really cool. And I like the routine for that big finish. I use a version of this on stage, believe it or not, with bigger sponge balls. If I'm doing a birthday party and the kids are over 6 years old, I'll do a routine, that same routine for the kids. But I don't do it for strolling anymore, simply because no matter how careful I am, some of them hit the floor, and I just didn't want the routine to end with the magician on the ground searching for his little red balls. So, but it's a great routine. Out of everything that I've ever done for strolling magic, Eugene's right. It gets screams. It's, if you've never learned Eugene's routine, you know, get it now. It's really, I mean, I've been doing it for about 20 years and it still gets incredible reactions. It's one of the strongest things that I do. I don't care that it's sponge balls. It just gets a great reaction. So that's what I used to use. Some of the things I used to use, and there's other things I can't think of right now. I had other card tricks where I had to have a tabletop. And so obviously I don't do those because when you're strolling and you're walking up the groups, I mean, you have to use nothing but your hands or the spectator's hands. It's just something really uncouth about putting cards and things on people's tables. And I used to do it. And dumb, very, very dumb. So I'm going to get into my first set that I will do. And when I do cross the rolling magic, I typically have two sets of three on me. So I can go to one table, do a set of three, go to another table, do a different set of three. Honestly, most of the time what I do is I just wind up mixing and matching, just depending on my mood and my read of the group. You know, sometimes I'll only do one trick depending on the receptivity of the group. Other times, if a table's really into what I'm doing, then I'll keep going. I'll do four or five tricks for that table. But this is my first set that I developed. Because I wanted a little bit of a flow to it. I didn't want to just go, well, here's a trick, here's another trick. So I developed this this little set. I opened my close-up set with Hundi 500. There is a lot of different ways to take several dollar bills and change them into five $100 bills. This, to me, is still the best and the simplest for strolling work, because all you need is just the bills and one other thing you can buy from an office supply store or even a grocery store. You can put the gimmicks together, and it's really nice. The angles are really good on this. This is put out by Greg Wilson a million years ago, but thankfully it's still available. And it's available from probably other stores too, but it's also available from Penguin Magic. It's still listed as a DVD. I don't know if you can get it as a download or not, but just for the sake of completeness for this episode, I'm going to read the ad copy. Okay. Do you love the $100 bill switch, but find the folding and unfolding process to be a bit slow and sluggish? Wait until you experience the Formula One speed of Gregory Wilson's Hyundai 500. Greg's version of Patrick Page's modern-day classic is a transposition of five $1 bills into five $100 bills with a handling that has been souped up, streamlined, and built for speed. From the 10 different supercharged performances in this DVD filmed throughout Los Angeles, you'll have the chance to see for yourself how invisibly from any angle the bills change and the impact this has on audiences of all levels. This one-of-a-kind DVD also includes a special multi-angle shifter, which puts you in the driver's seat, allows you to switch any time between three different camera angles during the explanations, the edited version, the overhead, and from the front. After the initial investment, you'll carry and use Hyundai 500 every day. So buckle up, hold tight, and dash for cash. Okay. And there's like one FAQ. Does a Hyundai 500 come with a gimmick? No, but the DVD shows you step by step how to create it. And it's super easy to create as long as you follow the instructions. And what I like about it is that all you need is the money and then that one item I mentioned from the grocery store or a office supply store. In fact, kind of a funny story. I went to my wife and I went to the Poconos a number of years ago for a vacation. And the way that, I don't know if it's still like it now, but back then when you went in to dine, they would seat you at tables with other couples. So there'd be like eight people at a table. And my wife and I are kind of shy, so it was always kind of awkward. So whenever the people at the table found out I was a magician, they're like, oh, can you do a trick? And I do some fork bending because the forks are right there on the table. And then this one couple, can you show us something else? And I said, well, I'll put something together tomorrow. And I ran to the local grocery store and grabbed the items that I needed and put together a Hyundai 500. And I was able to do another couple magic tricks for them. Okay, so that's a little bit about Hyundai 500. My second piece, I would go into a bill switch, and the bill switch that I used was Money Morph by, is it Kevin King? Yeah, I got it right here on Penguin Magic. Yeah, Money Morph by Kevin King. I'm going to read the DVD ad copy. The bill switch is one of the most coveted effects of both walk-around and stage magicians. If you already use it, you know how powerful it is. The effect is sensational. Now, thanks to Kevin King's Money Morph video, it's even better. With your sleeves rolled up, your hands clearly empty, you borrow a bill. As you slowly fold and then unfold the bill, it visibly changes to an entirely different bill. Imagine the possibilities. Turn a bill inside out or change a $1 bill into $100. Using his critically acclaimed handling, Kevin King will show you how to make the bill switch absolutely seamless. Unlike previous techniques, Kevin's switch makes it appear as though you are morphing one bill into the other. There's no pause as the critical moment where the actual switch takes place. I switched over to Kevin's technique. It's clearly a significant improvement over the original. So whether you're learning for the first time or just want to improve your existing switch, allow Kevin to teach you his revolutionary technique step by step with the subtleties. You'll be changing bills faster than you can print them. Okay, I like this. And this was older than dirt, too. I learned this. Okay, it's 2024. Let me do some math. I moved to at least 25 years. I moved to Pittsburgh in late 90s and learned this. I actually taught myself how to do a bill switch by watching Harry Anderson over and over again on his special. his special, Wise Guy, that was on Showtime. And I had no idea how the Bill Switch was done. I was absolutely blown away. Out of everything that Harry did and that special, that was one of the things that just blew me away the most, because his hands were empty. And then somebody had mentioned to me, I'm like, oh, that was a thumb tip. I'm like, oh, okay. And then after that, it was clear, and I kind of cobbled together my own handling. And the guy at the magic store said, try this one. And he gave me Kevin King's DVD. And what's nice about this particular DVD is that this technique, rather, is that your hands never cover the bill. Like Harry's routine, and I don't know if this was the original routine or not, but Harry's routine, the bill goes completely out of sight for a couple of seconds during the actual switch. And with this, it apparently never leaves your sight at all. It's just you fold it and unfold it, and as you unfold it, it changes to another bill. And this is old. There's been other bill switches that come down over the years. I don't need them. This one, to me, is the best. Because all you need is the critical, the critical magic item and a couple of bills, and you are set. And he also advocates for using an inside out bill, because if you change it to a 5 or 100, for example, and then you go to change it back, well, people don't want you to change a higher value bill to a lower value bill. And this kind of reminds me, too, and I'm going to go off on a bit of you're getting an inside view is how I think about magic today. I don't like it when magicians borrow a bill, change it into like 100, and then change it back to a dollar and hand it back again. Because if you look at like a roller coaster, you're like going up the hill. You're like, whoa, it changed to 100, and then back down to a 1. The ride's over. That kind of thing. So it's emotionally logically never makes sense either. If you really could change a bill into 100, why would you change it back? Which leads me to a really funny story. When I was breaking in Hyundai 500, at the time I was doing, and I was nervous about it, because I don't do a lot of close-up magic. I was doing more close-up magic back then, and I was also doing a lot of fundraisers for school. So to break in the Hyundai 500, I was at the school, and people were coming in and being seated for the fundraiser, and I was just doing some close-up magic before I did my stage show. So I'm like, well, I'll do Hyundai 500 for a bunch of people. So I'm going around, and everybody's reacting to it really well. And by the way, the Hyundai 500 reset takes like half a second. It's really nice that way, too. So I changed them all into... at the time, I think I was using 20, so I mean, I didn't have $500 for the Hyundai 500, and now I do. But back then, I think I changed ones to 20s, if I remember correctly, maybe even fives. No, I think it was 20s. So I changed the ones to 20s, and then one guy looks at me, a kid's father, and he says, "Can you change them back?" And I said, "Why?" Which got a huge laugh, because everybody immediately got what I meant. So anyway, and the reason why I started off with these two tricks, by the way, but I'm all over the place today. I apologize. We're moving my wife's hair salon into the house this weekend, so I'm frazzled wanting to get this podcast done. Let me give you the entire three-trick opener set. I've got Hyundai 500, then I segue into the $100 bill switch, and then I finish with rising cards. Okay. So I started off the Hyundai 500 because, again, to me, a good opener when you're doing strolling magic is the guests just have to watch. You want to get to the magic fast. You don't want to have them do anything. You don't want to have them hand anything. You just and you can hand out money for the Hyundai 500, so I will say that, but you don't have to. So I start off with that, and it's very arresting, very surprising, and of course, people always ask, can you do it with mine? So then I started following up with a bill switch. I'm like, sure, let me try. So then they, people are amazed when you hear that, and then somebody will dig out a one, and then they'll hand it to me, and I go, no, I have to do yours a little bit differently. So I start folding it up, doing the bill switch. Now, I don't know if this is going to work. I haven't known your money. I haven't loved your money, which is ridiculous, but it just makes me laugh, so I say it. So I fold it. Oh, no, it didn't work. Yours went wrong, and I unfold it, and it's the mismade bill. And everybody reacts really well to that, so that goes over really well. Then I fold it back, give them the dollar bill back, and then I go into rising cards, and I say, well, I'm sorry that didn't work out, but I do want to give you a gift. Don't get excited. It's cheap. And then I do rising cards, and I'll talk about that in a second. So to me, all three of these tricks, they flow together nicely. The money opens up because, who doesn't love money? And then we segue into trying it with their bill. And then, oh, I'm sorry that didn't work out. Let me give you a consolation prize. And I do a rising card effect, and they get to keep the signed card afterwards. So they just go boom, boom, boom. They just flow really well nicely together. It's a nice little show. We got an opening, a middle, and a conclusion. Although, for my money, the $100 bill switch is the best trick out of the three, but the way that it flows, I just do it that way. Now, my rising cards trick is before I was recording this episode, I dug around online. I couldn't find them anymore. I used to use Hampton Ridge loops and to do my rising cards. And if you want to, and there's other loops out there, I just hadn't bothered to research them. But if you want to learn my handling for this, because I can do this, my handling, I can do it with a borrowed deck of cards, which is really cool. And the effect is very, very simple. The way I do it, I take out a deck of cards, I hand somebody a marker, I hand somebody the card box to inspect, and then I hand them the deck of cards to inspect. Then they take the cards, they take one out. I'm not looking at them at this point. They take out one card, they sign it. And then I take the card box back. I put the cards back inside the card box. I take the signed card, put it back inside the card box. Then I hold my hand in the middle of the table so we can watch all the way around. So they've inspected everything. And then, of course, their card does rise, and then I give it to them to keep as a souvenir because it's a signed card. And that always, I mean, that's my closer for this particular set. It always gets a hell of a response. And I still do it to this day on occasion. Again, I just don't do a lot of strolling anymore, although that may soon change. So the Hampton Ridge loops were really nice. It came like 3 to a pack. And I got my handling down so tight that I was doing a grand opening. This was about 10 years ago, maybe more. I was doing a grand opening for a drugstore. And somebody called me. They wanted a magician there. They had a balloon artist there and everything. So here I am once again outside in the sweaty June sun here in Western New York. I had my little table set up, and I would just have, guests would walk up to me as they're going into the grocery store or into the drugstore. So I had a home base. I was able to do some table side stuff too, where I actually had, I was able to do like a matrix routine and everything. But these two 12-year-old kids were like fascinated by the rising cards. They saw me do it for a couple of different people. I did it for them because it's easily repeatable. And then one of them goes, "Well, can you do it with any deck?" I go, "Yeah." And then one of them runs into the grocery and into the drugstore to buy a deck of cards. So I'm like, okay. So I got my get ready. And again, I'm not going to get into the handling. I'll put a link to one of my products where I explain my handling really well. And I was able to do it with his cards, did the whole trick with his cards. His signed card rose out of the deck, and I handed him back his deck of cards, and they were none the wiser. It was really cool. It was really cool. That's why my handling is so good for rising cards, which is why I never bothered to buy mechanical rising cards or anything like that. Just give me one of those loops and I'm good to go. So that was my first 3-trick set. I can't do a review for the Hampton Ridge loops because I can't find them anywhere, but they're very robust, would last 40, 50, 60 performances. I mean, they worked out really well. So that was my first set, Hyundai 500 flowing into $100 bill switch, the Money Morph, and then the Rising Card. So my second set is more mentalism based, and I would do that depending on the kind of show that I was, because I almost always did mentalism as a stage show. But when I first started doing strolling magic, it was more magic based for adult audiences, and I eventually segued over to purely mentalism for like almost everything that I do for stage for audiences. So I eventually developed a mentalism strolling set, and so that was it's hard to describe it. My opening piece was I'd have my wallet out, in full view, and somebody would name out loud a 2-digit number, and then they'd name out loud the initials of any person they knew. I would open up my wallet, take out a business card, and in the back of that card was that 2-digit number and the initials, and that was my opener, and it would just blew people away. Then my second piece was fork bending. I would do Banachek's routine, psychokinetic silverware, and then I would finish up with an original piece I call Voodoo Blistered, and I'll tell you more about that in a second. So my opening piece, I did it with, surprise, surprise, a thumb writer, and a Stealth Assassin wallet. Now, I'm going to read the ad copy for Stealth Assassin wallet. I've had it for a million years, and thankfully, it's still around. Okay, and I'm really glad because I think I've experimented with a number of different wallets, and I'm not a wallet guy. I'm really not. I think I just have the one. I think I used to have a bigger index wallet, but I think I just have just the one wallet now. I don't think I have... Oh no, I've got one. I'm sorry, I have one other wallet. I've got the power wallet, but that doesn't really count for this kind of thing. So I do have two wallets, but I know people that collect wallets like crazy, and that just, I don't get it. So okay, Stealth Assassin wallet. This is version 1.1. So this is a bit more advanced than what I've got. And I remember the advancements, hearing about it, that the new ones had, you know, the magnets stitched into them instead of glued, which reminds me, I've got to glue one of my magnets back in place and things like that. But I think it's pretty much the same deal. So when Peter Nardi created the Mind Spy and the Stealth, he had a very special wallet made for himself. Peter has used this wallet for the past 3 years, and to this day, only one other person has had the pleasure of owning or working with the incredible wallet. This is Peter Nardi's updated version of the best-selling Stealth Assassin. The Stealth Assassin version V1.1 has all the great features of the original, but now with an extra pocket on the SUC side of the wallet, the magnets are now stitched in place. Yeah, I just mentioned that. Please note the original Stealth Assassin is no longer in production, and the new V1.1 is now the standard. Do not be fooled by cheap imitations. The Stealth Assassin is the wallet of choice for many of the world's top mentalists. Manufactured in high-quality leather with a great attention to detail, the Assassin takes all the greatest elements from his predecessors and combines them to create something new and powerful. This is truly the utility device for the mentalist. Carry the Assassin with you, and you will have a complete mentalism act in your pocket. The Stealth Assassin Wallet V1.1 is a two-way peak wallet, including the SUC peak with permission from Mark Strivings. The effects one can perform with the Assassin are virtually unlimited. Among them are predict a driver's license number, predict a birthday, predict a credit card number, have a spectator write or draw anything on the back of a business card. The mentalist can then read the spectator's mind and tell them what is on the business card. Or the mentalist can choose to simply redraw what the spectator has drawn. Comes with a wallet and two instructional DVDs featuring Peter Nardi and Mark Spellman. The DVDs include full routines, handlings, timing, tips, and bonus effects and ideas. DVD 1 runs approximately 54 minutes. DVD 2 runs approximately 1 hour and 9 minutes. Yeah, this thing's fantastic. Like I said, I've been using this thing for, God, when did I get this? It has to be going on 20 years because I got it specifically for strolling, and I don't do much strolling anymore. So I have to have had it for at least 20 years. I am just guessing there. But it's fantastic. It's got two different peaks. I use both of them depending on what kind of routine I'm doing. I use one of the peaks when I'm doing my mini seances. I do the other peak when I'm doing strolling, or I'm sorry, when I do... I do a really cool Doc Hilford routine where somebody writes down any word in the English language, and then they call somebody on their phone, and then that person tells them that word. I mean, it's a really cool routine, and I use the other peak, the Mark Strivings peak, to get the information for that particular routine, and a bunch of other things too. Like I said, drawing dupes, it's got an index built into it, you know, two different peaks, it's got the sight unseen sight and scene feature, the SUC, that was developed by Mark Strivings, and it's the one reason. I mean, everybody talks about the Mark Strivings sight and scene wallet, and honestly, I should get one because it's got some really cool features. But honestly, with the Stealth Assassin, I don't need it. So that's the wallet I use for my opening trick when I pull out the prediction is basically what it is. And the thumb writer that I use, I mean, there's a million thumb writers to covertly write something out there. There's thumb writers where it's just like a thumb tip with a piece of lead on the end of it. The one I use has a list of lead on it. So from a distance, it looks like a Sharpie, so I can use it for stage. A lot of people, they gravitate toward a swami, which is a little tiny thing stuck to your thumb, you know, about the size of a thumbtack. And they also use the under the nail writers, and there's also the band writers, which wrap around your finger. And I've tried all of those. I mean, the first time I did a swami routine is for a sweet 16 party, and the damn thing fell off and it hit the floor, and then there's like 1 5-year-old in the group, and he's like, yeah, I think something fell off the floor. And I said, I think you're right. And everybody laughed, and we just kind of moved on. So I want security when I work, so I just use a thumb writer. And a lot of mentalists will say, well, that's only applicable for stage, but if you handle it properly, nobody ever sees it. So that's what I use for that routine. And again, I've got some really cool tips and psychological bits that I do that are in one of my that are in some of my handlings. And I'll include the link to my cause and effects books in the show notes this week. So after the an opening, and by the way, the reason why I do that piece is, again, you know, think about the psychology here. I'll go back to a stage guy that I saw to illustrate my concept. I went on a cruise ship and with my wife, my mother-in-law, and my sister-in-law, and we went to a stage show. They had a magician on there, and his opening piece was this thing where he was handing out 10 opening or 10 large envelopes to people in the audience, and it was like a... Was it a human phone number thing? I don't remember. I don't remember what the routine was. It took forever. It's like a 10-minute routine before. This is like his first trick, and it was terrible. So, you know, I like, my psychology is, you know, when I'm doing magic, I'm on the first piece to go bam, just hit him upside the head, get to the magic as fast as possible. And that's what this does. A couple of questions, and then bang, we're right there. They don't have to do anything other than answer a couple of questions. They don't have to provide anything. We're off to the races. Then my second routine, as I mentioned, is fork bending. Because again, this is a mentalist, a mentalism set list that I created. Psychokinetic silverware. I learned this when I was living in Pittsburgh. So I've been doing this honestly for close to 30 years. And, probably 99. So probably close to 25, 26 years. I'll amend myself. And, it's been out forever, you know, and I'm gonna read the ad copy for this. If you could really bend metal with your mind, psychokinetic silverware is exactly how it would look. You'll see cold, hard steel melt like butter, bending, twisting, breaking, and moving seamlessly on its own, even in a spectator's hand. Banachek's metal bending is so amazing, so realistic, he's often been accused of being and doing the real thing. And in fact, after studying Banachek's metal bending, the McDonnell Laboratory for Psychic Research proudly announced to the scientific community they discovered someone with genuine psychic abilities. The National Enquirer and other media have also heralded Banachek's psychokinetic talents. On this download, Jerry and Banachek finally reveal the real secrets to these amazing routines. Jerry McCambridge, I should add in his last name, even though it's not in the promo, reveal the secrets to these amazing routines. Not only will you get to see how everything looks in performance, you'll also learn the real inside work, the fine points, the psychology of metal bending. These are secrets which have been very tightly guarded until now. There's a couple of testimonials on there. When I bought this, I'd heard about metal bending. I'd seen Elaine New do metal bending at a small conference I went to. He didn't teach it, unfortunately. So I started digging around and I found this DVD, and I was so blown away by the teaching of it. I got it from Hocus Pocus. I actually wrote back and said, this should be sold for a lot more. You know, one of those things. And it really should be. I mean, I don't know if Banachek is the first guy to teach metal bending to magicians, but he's definitely the one with the highest profile. And the fact that now it's a $20 download, but even back then it was a $30 DVD, and the fact that he released it for so cheap, I really feel it could have been sold for like $1,000. I mean, the information is so powerful, all the psychology. I have done this routine literally tens of thousands of times, and it always kills. I mean, it always kills, to the point where I actually don't do it much anymore because I'm so sick of it. Although I'm probably going to be resurrecting it for this ongoing special close-up magic opportunity I've been handed, and I'm being very vague about this because I'm actually going to be talking about it more in depth very soon on the podcast for reasons which will soon become clear. So the DVD is, Banachek teaches everything extremely well. They've got good camera work, good lighting. Jerry and Banachek, I know they don't talk anymore, at least that's what I've heard, but that on this DVD, they had a good banter. There was a lot of, little jokes and everything, and all the bits of business, the psychology, that's where it really is. Because, I mean, metal bending is actually really easy. You just bend it. But it's about hiding it, about how to present it, to make it look like it's actually bending in real time in front of their eyes. I mean, the time bend alone is simply astounding. Really great stuff. I mean, this, you know, if I was rating everything today, you know, obviously everything I'm rating today is going to be a 10 out of 10 simply because I'm using it. I have used it all for decades. Really great routine. There's been plenty of other metal bending out there. I know Richard Ostlin has a bunch of metal bending resources. His stuff's great too. There have been plenty of other artists who've contributed to it, and they're all great. I'm lazy. You know, that's why I keep on doing the Hyundai 500 and Money Morph, because, you know, once I learn a technique, I don't bother to try to create a new one or learn another one. I don't have a need to most of the time. So even though there's been a ton of other metal bending coming out over the years, I stick with Banachek's because I know it. And And it works. It works wonderfully well. All you have to do is run out and grab yourself some forks or borrow some forks and away you go. Just I will close with this kind of a funny story too about this set. Be careful where you do this and who you do this for. I was doing this for a first communion? It wasn't a birthday, but it was some kind of a special event. And there's a lot of kids there, a lot of adults there. It was a nice restaurant. And I did my metal bending. I don't think I did it for, close-up. I either did it for close-up or stage or both. I don't remember. And as I was packing up after my stage show, kids were coming up to me, look, I can bend metal too. And they weren't being, cocky or anything. They're like, look, I can bend it too. So it turned out they're running around bending the restaurant's forks. I'm like, oh God. So obviously the restaurant hated me after that. So be careful where you show this. I mean, if you're doing this in a restaurant and there's kids, kids may try to replicate what you're doing, so be careful. So that was my second piece. My third piece is a quasi original routine. I say quasi because it does involve a gimmick, and it is also taught to me, and I put it into one of my books because the gentleman who taught it to me, he has no interest in selling magic products, but I gave him full credit, and his name is Lauren Turner, and the routine is Voodoo Blistered, where it uses the Okito Voodoo Doll, and then afterwards, during the Voodoo Doll, somebody lights a match, and they touch it to a drawing of a hand, and my corresponding hand, a finger, has a blister on it. And the reason why this is so neat is because my way of getting a blister on it is, I don't think anybody's ever come up with this before. Wait, did John Ferrantino do something similar? Now I can't remember. But I haven't seen it a lot. My way of getting the blister in the hand, I was doing a walk around gig with somebody and another magician. It was a really big event. They hired two magicians. And after watching me do this piece a couple of times, he came up to me and said, how are you getting the blister in your hand? I don't see anything. You're not going in your pockets. And I showed him. He's like, oh my God, that's like so brilliant. I will list my cause and effects books where I teach this routine in the show notes. So let me read the ad copy for the Okito Voodoo Doll. There's been other rising dolls that have come out over the years. I keep going back to this one because this one's still the best. Here it is. The magician shows a realistic looking voodoo doll and he places it in the spectator's hand to view it as it is just a little straw doll. When the magician lays the doll on his own palm, it suddenly comes to life. It rises like a mummy out of a casket and stands up straight. Spectators will believe that an invisible force is making it rise up and down. This looks insanely good. This doll is completely under control, no wires or threads. Doll measures 4.5 inches in height. And it's on Penguin Magic, but it's put out by Top Hat Productions, which is, oh man, I'm drawing a blank on his name. He's the same guy who put out the Growing and Shrinking, Bruce Kavler, the Growing and Shrinking Head guy. This is great. I've owned multiple versions of this over the years, and I keep going back to Bruce's because they're so well built. And this is a classic. It's like $20 on Penguin Magic. I mean, this is one of those things where I was shown this by my magic mentor, Lauren Turner. He's the one that showed me this routine, and it was like inexplicable. When I learned magic from Lauren, most of it was bizarre or mentalism. So I got a first class education in bizarre magic and mentalism at a very young age, and it really influenced me. So to always look for realistic magic when I was performing for teens or adults. It's a powerful effect. What more can I say about it? The Okito Voodoo Doll, there's been others that have been made, some that are good, some that are not so good. The only thing I don't like about this, and I'm still giving it a 10, is that this little straw voodoo doll looks so darn new. So I've actually singed mine. I took a lighter, I singed mine a little bit to make it look a little bit more aged. I might age it up a little bit more because it still looks a little bit too new. That's only the real problem I can see with this voodoo doll. I've never had anybody say, that doesn't look very old. In fact, I don't say that as old. I just bring the doll out and I do it. So I don't give them any context to criticize the look of the doll. But considering what I'm doing with it, I do think it should be something that looks a little older. This is so strong and so visible, I can even do it on stage. I've done it on stage in front of 200 kids before when I do my middle school shows. And they can see it. They've got better visual acuity and they can see the little guy rise. I don't do the blister on stage because only one person could really see it, my volunteer, but I've done the Rising Doll many times on stage. So that's my three set, or that's my three trick set for my mentalism. Again, I'm going from something that is very simple. All the spectators have to do is answer a couple of questions. Then I get into the fork bending where I involve them a little bit more because they're handling forks and that sort of thing. And then I get into Voodoo Blistered where they're involved even more because they've got to, you know, they have to have a light a match and they have to blow it out and touch it to this piece of paper or business card. But it goes from, again, bang, 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 bang. Three really strong pieces. Just a nice, tight three-trick set, which runs, let's see, the thumb tip one is pretty quick, just a couple of minutes. The fork bending can be, depending if I do all six phases, I'll say 5 minutes. And then, yeah, and then the voodoo doll is like maybe 3 minutes. So, yeah, it's like a nice 10, you know, like a nice tight 10, 12-minute set. My first set, Honey 500, that's a few minutes. $100 bill switch, that's like, you know, a couple minutes. Rising card. So, yeah, that's close to another 10-minute set, too. So I got two nice, solid 10-minute sets. And but I will be honest, these days when I'm doing close-up magic, I usually open with the thumb tip wallet routine because it's so freaking strong, doesn't matter what I'm doing. And then after that, I kind of read the audience, and depending on how engaged they are will depend on what I do next. I think it's a really fun set. I think there's a lot to, if you're considering getting into close-up magic, I think there's a lot from this episode of the podcast to kind of take away from it. The fact that, you know, you walk up and you've got an entire act planned, not just random tricks planned. I like it when they flow. Also working from the hands, not asking spectators to, you know, clear out their tables or anything like that. Having a quick opener, a more involved middler, and then a really killer closer. I mean, it's basic show structure. And even if you don't, you know, like, again, my first set is all magic-based. My second set is all mentalism-based. When I'm doing close-up magic, I'm not a purist. I mean, some mentalists, they wouldn't go near a magic trick. If you listen to some of them talk, they think that magic cheapens what they do and everything. And so, I mean, some mentalists, I mean, they, I'm not going to say they hate magic, but they come off as sounding like they don't respect magic. I mean, they really try to distance themselves from magic. Me, I'm like Bill Abbott. I'm not a purist. If I'm reading an audience and I read that they're going to enjoy magic better, then I'll do the Hyundai 500 or the money. Especially if I walk up to a table before I even get into anything, they go, "Oh, can you, you know, you're a magician. Can you change my money into a, you know, my dollar into a hundred?" I mean, I've been asked that before too. Well, yeah, now that just became my opening. Yeah, give me a dollar and I'll try it. And, so when you're a close up magician too, you also have to be willing to, go with the flow. Make sure that you're not locked into one way of thinking and be prepared for people to interrupt you, because it is a closer environment. You are inches from their face, as the saying goes. People will ask questions. They may ask to look at things. So, yeah, close-up magic is a lot of fun. I just thought this would be like a nice change from the norm. Instead of me just talking about a topic and then getting into a trick, I thought, why don't I just go into my particular close-up sets, and then I can talk about the tricks and do like little mini reviews too. So hope you enjoyed this episode of the podcast. It's something a little bit different from the norm. And I will be back next week with an all-new episode. Be sure to check out the show notes for the links to my Cause and Effects books, which will outline how to do some of the routines I talked about today and a whole bunch of others. And as always, visit theprofessionalmagicianclubpro.com. Again, the professionalmagicianclubpro.com for free goodies, weekly articles, and all kinds of great stuff. So that's it for today. I'm Chris Johnson. Have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening to today's show. If you haven't already, subscribe today so you don't miss a single episode. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode of The Professional Magician.